I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, the current crisis has thrown up some fundamental questions. What does a cycling commentator do when there's no cycling to comment on? What does a pro cyclist do when there are no races to train for? And what does Ruler Stuart Clapp actually do all day? We'll try to answer the first two with Ned Bolting and Nathan Haas. The last one will remain a mystery. This is the Ruler podcast, supported by Lacquer, bicycle insurance powered by the community. So, Ned Bolting, welcome to the Ruler podcast. We're probably about 15 minutes away from each other by bike, but we are communing by the internet, as we're all getting used to. What are you actually up to? What does a cycling commentator do if there's no cycling?
That is a very good question, Ian, and I'm kind of grappling with the answer myself. I suppose my working year has in the past divided quite equally and quite pleasingly into three chunks, really. Through the winter, I'm often engaged in writing a book of some description or other. The last book I wrote was actually about darts and not cycling. At the moment, I'm writing a book about football. During the spring and summer, by and large, most of my work then sort of migrates back to cycling and involves, as you say, television work, commentating on bike races. And in the autumn, over the last few years, I've been doing my one-man show. So yeah, spring and summer work has just disappeared. It's left a bit of a void, to be honest. I'm supposed to be knuckling down and writing my football book, which I really should give a bit of attention to. But at the moment, I haven't really got the mental bandwidth. I think a lot of people are struggling, I think, to concentrate on stuff. I'm no different. And equally, I should be writing material for my show in the autumn, which I do still hope I will be touring. But there is, I have to say, a slight question mark over whether or not I will be touring that material. So again, it makes life a little bit tricky just to concentrate. And even if I could concentrate properly, what would I put in the show? You know. So yeah, I'm being a little bit unproductive.
Well, we've all got a lot of time, but strangely, not much to fill it with.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I am doing actually, just because I might as well, Ian, is I'm halfway through recording, just on my own really, sitting at my desk, recording an audiobook essentially of how I won the Yellow Jumper, which I wrote 10 years ago. I've managed to get back the audiobook rights from the publishers, from Random House, who have handed the audiobook rights back to me that they never exploited. And I'm going to, as soon as I'm ready, I'm just going to put that up on the internet and people can, you know, might just kill a few minutes here and there for people while there's no racing on. So at least I'm doing that.
Have you been out on your bike or running at all?
I haven't been running. As you know, running's something I do on a daily basis. I've actually been exercising indoors. I haven't got Zwift or a Turbo or anything like that. I have got a staircase and I've got a chalkboard. And I run up, it drives everybody in my family absolutely mad. I run up and down stairs. And yesterday I ran up and down our flight of stairs 100 times.
What, and you mark it on the chalkboard every time?
I mark it on the chalkboard like some lunatic in a prison cell. But it kind of, weirdly, I find it very satisfying.
It's like some sort of analogue Garmin.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's it's unsustainable, really. I'm worried about the staircase. It's a Victorian house, and I think I might just go through it at some point. I do occasionally have to go out on the bike, but that's simply because there's an elderly couple who live over in Greenwich who I am providing with food.
Now, I noticed that you're not currently on Twitter, and a lot of people have turned to social media during this time. Is there a reason behind that?
Well, there is. It was last weekend. So not the weekend that's just gone, but the other one. I mean, time's blurring, isn't it? So I can't be much more precise than that. But it was the weekend where I think it was beautiful sunny weather, and it was the last weekend before the lockdown was imposed. And I was looking out. I mean, we'd essentially been living a lockdown life anyway. My partner works in the NHS. She's a nurse. Partly out of respect for her job, we'd been very much indoors anyway. And I was just looking outside, and I was seeing everybody essentially carrying on as normal. It got to me a bit, and I wrote what is, with hindsight, was perhaps a rather ill-judged tweet, in which I said, I can't remember my exact wording, but I said something like, I honestly, guys, I don't think we should go out on bike rides anymore. It kind of divided opinion, and it went, honestly, in the tweet just went, you know, got a lot of traction very quickly. I understood that I'd said something rather off the cuff that flew in the face of government advice, since you clearly can still do that. And not only government advice, but also what people wanted to do. And a lot of people were telling me that they needed to go out on a leisure bike ride. They thought it was safe, and it was imperative for their mental health as well as their physical well-being. And I take that point. I take it to a certain extent. Anyway, cut a long story short, Ian. I spent a day last Sunday trying to respond to people and trying to be reasonable, and eventually changed my position somewhat, having listened to what people said. But I wasted an entire day of nervous energy doing it. I woke up the following morning and I just hit delete. Because I've been on Twitter, and it's been a wonderful place to be, but it's a decade of my life now, and I've moved on. I don't want it in my life during these months of isolation. I want to be able to read books, and I want to go off to other spaces that don't involve Twitter.
Well, going back to the cycling, there's supposed to be a decision on the Tour de France by mid-May.
Yeah.
What's your instinct?
Well, I mean, it can't go ahead. I think we've known that for a long time. And I
apparently the ASO haven't quite clocked that yet.
Well, I think they probably have, Ian. I mean, I think it does. Listen, I speak from no great position of authority on this, or indeed inside knowledge. I haven't had the, you know, the nudge and the wink from anybody. But I think it follows the pattern of behaviours that we've seen, not just in cycling, actually, but across sports, whether it's Wimbledon or the Tokyo Olympics, or even back in cycling, you know, with the Giro d'Italia. And before that, let's not forget that triumvirate of races that really sparked the whole thing off. Tirreno, Adriatico, Strade Bianche and Milan San Remo. I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? But it took RCS, if you remember, a long time to reach the obvious conclusion that Strade Bianche and the other races couldn't happen. And I think the reason it took them such a long time, even though they knew that the race wasn't going to go ahead, was simply because of their insurance policies and their liability procedures that they have in place. I'm convinced that the Tour de France is all about limiting the financial damage that this will do to ASO and ensuring that a force majeure is in operation, and so that their insurances will at least compensate or mitigate for some of their lost earnings.
Yeah, because the idea of running the tour behind closed doors, whatever that means, was clearly not a starter from the very beginning, was it?
No, I mean, it's just fanciful. I mean, it's fanciful, isn't it? And it would be a very odd spectacle, even if it were feasible. And by the way, you know, the entourage of people, even if you took out the hundreds of thousands of spectators, the entourage of folk who you would need on the race simply to make it happen would be a crowd in itself.
Assuming that all three Grand Tours are off, because given the current state of Spain, the Vuelta doesn't look very likely. There is a possibility of restarting cycle sport, or indeed any other sport, sometime this year, what would your suggestion be?
Well, I mean, I think there's an opportunity to do something absolutely wonderful. I think it's unlikely because cycling is too riven with divisions and too, frankly, brittle with its financial modelling for these various interested parties to get their heads together. But in my mind's eye, I imagine in October, the possibility that you could have a 2 or 3 week long festival of cycling, which nods to the territory of Spain, Italy and France, the three grand tours, could take the race into all those territories, would incorporate, if you like, Paris-Roubaix, Milan-San Remo, and let's say the Classica San Sebastian. So you have three significant one-day races within that festival, and would run as part of it the World Championship road races, both for the men and the women as well, and the Time Trial Championships. So you could scrunch a number of important events into 1, 2 or 3 week period, and get RCS and ASO and the UCI all together and make it happen. I think it would be absolutely fantastic as a response to the decimation of the calendar.
Well, fingers crossed that something like that might actually happen.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many fingers you've got, but you've got to do a lot of crossing, Ian. I mean, the problem is, I don't think that listen, they may surprise me, but I don't think that the relevant parties have enough. I've used the bandwidth word too much recently, but I don't think they have the bandwidth to really accommodate that. So I think at the moment they're too busy surviving and getting from day to day through terrible financial hardship, these organisations.
It does seem to be, though, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to actually rethink professional sport and pro cycling in particular, because the model is pretty much defunct, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, Ian. I've always been a big defender of the way that the calendar works. I've never, aside from the fact that so many races are financially on their last legs and a little bit inviable, which I suspect has always been the case, actually, throughout the history of the sport. I actually like the way that the calendar operates. I like its unpredictability, its random nature, the way it drifts from country to country and season to season, focuses on a different element of road racing as it goes. I love it. I'm not a reformer. I don't want to see it all homogenized into one big kind of world series or anything like that. I like it just the way it is, and I'm missing it terribly. So I don't know what will emerge and whether or not anything needs dramatically to change in terms of sort of remodeling the entire calendar. I fear that we're going to lose some races big time. You know, I think Yorkshire, for example, is symptomatic of the kind of race that could simply never reappear, I hate to say. And I don't think it'll be alone like that. So that will be different. But thinking about it, you know, from the rider's perspective, and this has only just occurred to me and dawned on me over the last couple of days, Ian, I think it could be very good for some of our star riders to have an enforced layoff for a year. I think there are signs over the last few years that Peter Sagan is suffering from sort of mental fatigue. He might just be rejuvenated after a layoff. I think the same probably applies to Julian Alaphilippe. And then there are riders like Mathieu van der Poel, Tom Dumoulin, and obviously Chris Froome, who've been suffering with various different health issues. Let's throw Mark Cavendish into the mix as well, for whom a year without racing could be the best thing. I mean, literally just what the doctor ordered. There are other riders for whom the timing couldn't be worse. I mean, I think of the young guns Tadej Pogacar and Remco Evenepoel, who are just champing at the bit this year, and they're going to be denied the opportunity to show just what they're about. And of course, Nairo Quintana, who's completely reinvented, he's going to be denied his tilt at the Tour de France, which was beginning to look hugely credible, I have to say. So it's a bit of a mixed story for some of those riders. But if you want to look for positives, I think some of these riders will come back hungrier and fitter next year.
The road book's going to be a bit slim this year, though, isn't it?
No doubt. As we build this collection, it's going to be hugely collectible, I hope, because it's a one-off occurrence, hopefully never to be repeated. But that the slim 2020 book, which I'm editing as we speak, I've had to abandon a lot of the writing that I had commissioned. I can't tell you some of the stuff that has survived the cull, but I'm really excited about it. But as we go and we begin to see light at the end of the tunnel, I'm going to fill it Even if the races, the road races are missing to a certain extent, I'm going to fill it with as much excellent writing about what has happened to all of us in our various different ways as I can possibly stick into its pages. So rest assured there will be a road book. It'll be a unique and hopefully brilliant account of an extraordinary year.
Okay, look forward to reading it. Continue to take care, Ned.
Likewise,
Ian. Look forward to hearing you commentate on some proper races when all this is over.
Mate, I'll be when I finally get unleashed, I'll be shouting down the microphone. I can't wait.
So I'm Toby Talpitz, the CEO and co-founder of Lucca. We've been going for over 2 years by now, and we can confidently say that we are 25% cheaper than our competitors. So you save money with Lucca, but getting a unique and much better experience. One thing we're really, really proud of is that we're doing all claims in-house. So when you file a claim with us, it doesn't go to a third-party administrator in the middle of nowhere. It sits with us, with our claims handlers, who are no insurance people, but are actual bike mechanics. Fairly unique, we believe, and that really gives us a unique take on the customer experience.
One rider who's been caught by the Spanish lockdown in Girona is Nathan House of Cofidis, and he joins us now. Nathan, how's it going over there?
So far, all things are good and dandy. I've managed to regain sanity since my last quarantine. And for me, this actually feels like old habits.
When you say old quarantine, of course, you were one of the first riders to get caught, weren't you, in the UAE?
Yeah, that was an interesting experience, to say the least. We managed to get out of Abu Dhabi a little bit before our official quarantine period was over, which felt like a big bonus. But then since landing in Spain and was hopefully going to try to get up to my other home, which is up in Andorra, but there was too much snow at the time. And in that time, I got locked into Spain, which has been a little bit of a surreal experience to sort of feel that my experience and journey as a quarantined human continues.
The lockdown in Spain is pretty much total from what we can see.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable, to be honest. And I've been truly, truly impressed by how well this community is actually dealing with it and how self-policing it seems to be. There's so few people walking the streets, really only to do the basic errands, which we're allowed to do here. But the government warnings on this have been taken very seriously, and a lot of local businesses have either closed or changed their business type to actually be manufacturing products for either the hospitals or the hospital staff. So the city really feels like it's banding together.
Have you been able to do any training at all? I saw a video of you on rollers doing what appeared to be Zumba of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. My partner, she loves doing Zumba, and I love riding my bike. Neither of us can do that really to our full extent at the moment. So we figured it would be kind of fun to join the two and do some indoor roller Zumba sessions. So she taught me a dog, he danced, and yeah, there we have it. It was probably the most embarrassing thing I've done on the internet.
Oh, there's time. But are you actually managing to kind of do some training most days, or at least get on the rollers most days?
Yeah, I've been very lucky. I was sent a full Zwift setup whilst in Abu Dhabi. Very generous company there for, really trying to engage and interact with the professional cyclists and help us through this really unique time. So it's been great to have Zwift, but at the same time, there's only so much indoor cycling you can do. And, you know, for what it's worth, indoor cycling is normally something that you do to, you know, make up for difficult training conditions or injury or any sort of scenario that you would expect that you can't, you're just trying to minimize the loss of form. But it's very rare that you're actually using indoor bikes to gain form or to gain a base training. In a week's time, I will have actually accumulated just on a month of quarantine time, which means, you know, no riding outdoors for a month. So, you know, I'm feeling worse and worse every day when it comes to my fitness, but I'm doing the best I can. And I think that sentiment is just shared by all athletes around the world at the moment, is that we're really just trying to do the best that we can and, you know, honor the commitments that our sponsors to really represent, the work they put in for us. But, you know, it's very difficult at the moment feeling your body change after all the amazing work that you did do from sort of October through until now.
I heard Geraint Thomas the other day saying that, you know, one of the big issues was that normally whenever you sit on a saddle, you have an idea of what it is you're doing it for. You know, you're doing something specific. You're not just riding your bike. But I guess now it's all very uncertain, isn't it?
I think Geraint has expressed that well. I think some athletes have come out and maybe pronounced their words in a slightly odd manner to sort of, you know, not take into account the intensity and the seriousness of the situation. You know, we don't want to be seen as entitled as athletes here, because we really are just part of the general population. We're just entertainers of a particular type. But I think what Geraint has done there is has given quite a good insight just into the kind of relationship that we have with fitness and with riding. And he's exactly right in that when we're training, we normally have a goal in mind. And then when you're all of a sudden you put onto an indoor training environment and you actually have absolutely no idea when your next race is going to be. Is it going to be a month, 3 months? Is it going to be next year? It's very hard to actually have that extra drive to use the indoor trainer, which at best has always just been a complementary training tool. So Geraint's definitely, you know, expressed himself well there. But the real challenge for everybody is actually just making sure that their health is the best that it can be, because nobody seems to be totally immune in any age bracket or any kind of place in society. No one seems to be immune to this virus, and I think, you know, I'm also being cautious about not doing too much training at the moment as well, just so I don't have any immunosuppression without having any of the other kind of, you know, health optimization elements that come with being outdoors. And that's the vitamin D, that's the fresh oxygen, that's the movement, that's the dynamicity of being able to see things and make calculations with your cognitive capacity. So there's a lot of brain chemicals in all of us right now, which are going to be different than being in our normal state, being a trained athlete outdoors. For myself at this point, I'm definitely trying to do as much work as I'm happy to do, but I also don't want to push it too much, because, you know, health for everybody is the priority right now.
And this doesn't feel like it's going away anytime soon, does it?
I think there's too many mixed messages right now for any of us to even kind of begin to float the ideas of ifs and whens. Every day there is a bit of new news. And it seems as though every time we get the news, we're recalibrating where we are emotionally to that new news that's coming in. It is a very interesting, you know, mental experiment at the moment to try to not buy into too much that's coming in and take everything day by day. Because, you know, if we try to put a guesstimate on it and then we're wrong, we're just letting ourselves down and getting disappointed. So I think when it comes down to sport right now, it's definitely one of the lowest priorities. You know, we're all ready to go as soon as the world, finds its way again through this pandemic. But yeah, it doesn't seem as though this is going to end anytime soon.
Nathan, thanks for talking to us. Stay well and continue to stay safe.
And you.
So, Rouleur Desire editor Stuart Clapp, no one's quite sure what you do all day anyway, but how are you coping? Are you still getting out occasionally?
I am getting out. I'm getting out. I'm following government advice, and that's to exercise once a day. And I've been doing that, going outside. Shoot me, guys. But I've been going out for like about an hour, take it steady, familiar roads, not going too far or too fast, just getting it done, coming back. Mainly for the fact that, well, I'm not an indoor training guy anyway, but I don't think my mental health will last until June. If I start riding the rollers now. Yeah, but it's a really weird time. Really. But apart from that, the roads are clear. It's one of the nicest times I've ever ridden.
You're not tempted by one of these Zwift group rides or something like that?
No, not in the slightest. Why would I do that? No, to each their own. But it's not something I don't have. Riding indoors high on my list of priorities. This isn't why I took up cycling. If I wanted to exercise indoors, I would have taken up squash or something. It's not really for me, and I'm going to ride for as long as I can outside, get a bit of fresh air until we're told not to. But I know that it's coming. Like, I've got a mate in Italy that was saying they're allowed 200 meters from their house. That's not exactly brilliant, is it, for cycling? But I guess turbo trainer sales will be going through the roof.
Yeah, and also a number of people, including Rafa, have brought out indoor training kit.
Yeah, I've got indoor training kit as well. It's called my shoes, some socks and some bib shorts. Do you have to wear a kit to wear in? My mate, no, I'm not giving this. This isn't an endorsement, but my mate Dan often goes on his turbo in his pants. You don't know my mate Dan, but I've created a mental image for my mates that listen to this. Yeah, he does. He's unique. He was a drummer.
Speaking of drumming, the last Ruler Desire shoot before lockdown was in a recording studio for some reason. What was that all about?
There's a bit of a story behind this. It's like, so in fact, the last podcast that I was on, I sounded really downbeat. This story I'm about to say is quite joyful. Right. So I spend quite a lot of time on Instagram looking for kits and things like that, smaller brands, because we often have like a smaller brand next to some of your sort of well-known brands like Castelli and things. Right. And I found this cycling company, the Australian, called Lumiere, and they do these shorts, right, that had leopard print, like bib shorts. See where I'm going with this, right?
Rock and roll bib shorts.
Yes, exactly that. Often what I do when I come up with an idea, okay, so take the Spitfire thing. That was for like Tour of Britain, you know, world champs being in the UK. Well, like, I needed to do something that's British. You go, all right, Spitfires, that's British. So with this, these shorts came first before anything else. I was like, I've got to get them in just because they are crazy. Well, they're a leopard print bib short. That's, you know, that's all you need to know, isn't it, really? So I read Neil Strauss's book, you know, The Dirt. And the film Motley Crue, The Dirt book, that is outrageous. It's like so far from reality in it. So, and I thought, hey, why don't we do something in a studio, right? My mate, Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly, right? He's from Southend. I've known Sam for years, since he hadn't started Get Cape at the time. He was in a band called Silverskin. He has a recording studio called SS2 Recording in Southend. And I said to Sam, can we borrow your studio for a shoot? And he's like, yeah, sure. So we went down there and I, like, Benedict turned up and they weren't really sure where I was going with this idea for a shoot. I think because I was so passionate about doing it in the studio, I think they did think it was a bit weird. But when they got there, they realised that he's like, Sam's, it's a proper recording studio. So I built the whole shoot around this pair of shorts. So everything that I called in was slightly rock and roll. So we had like Pariah sent over like a really leery jerseys with like tiger print on it and stuff like this. Because I put a load of eyeliner on and went with it. But it was great fun. Really, really good fun. We got some really fancy kit in there as well. Really nice bikes. We set fire to a helmet.
Why?
Because, right, I love that. You know the photo of Jimi Hendrix where he's sort of like, you know, leant over his Stratocaster and he's pouring lighter fluid on it and it's like smoke and flames are coming up. I wanted to do a photo like an homage to that, if you know what I mean. So Benedict's face, when I said we're setting light to this, and pulled out some white spirit to set it on fire. We didn't actually do that in the studio. I don't think Sam would have enjoyed that really, considering there's probably a few quids worth of gear in there. But we went outside. He's got like a court like yard outside and set fire to it there. And yeah, the best thing was Sam just came out, you know, and just sort of looked at it and went, oh, cool. like it was like nothing, like a normal day. But I suppose it is in the day of a like, you know, real life rock star.
And that's it from this podcast. There'll be a Ruler long read along shortly. And we'll be back with another podcast in a couple of weeks' time. Stay safe until then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.